better things to do with my money.
Welcome to the Life and Times of Captain Barney Miller podcast. I'm your host, Mike White. Joining me is the rookie, Chris Dashew.
It's mutated DNA, and it's in the sewers.
But nothing could survive in the sewers of New York, right? Not turtles or alligators or other things. Chuds.
I was waiting for a giant alligator reference, but...
Yeah.
Okay.
Right? Sure. Me too. I was waiting for that as well.
On this episode, we were talking about three episodes of the original Barney Miller show. Not that there were any remakes, thank goodness. We are talking about The DNA Story, which aired originally December 13th, 1979. The Dentist, which aired originally December 27th, 1979. And People's Court, which aired on January 3rd, 1980. We're breaking into the 80s in this episode. And we don't have a Christmas episode. I was so surprised. Neither Christmas nor do I think we had Thanksgiving. We didn't have Luger coming over and begging to go over and hang out with Barney. Nor do we get Luger in any of these episodes we're talking about this month.
No. Kind of a shame. He's a welcome presence. I will say, of all the cast members going into the 80s that look like they are ready to be in the 80s, there really is only one. And that's Harris. Everybody else looks firmly planted in the 70s.
Man, those ties are so wide.
Yeah,
everybody's ties. And yeah, Harris is stylish.
I know, man. But he always is. He always has been. He's the one who's got the pocket square. So he's got the perfectly manicured hair. But yeah, of all the people going into the 80s that look like they're ready for the 80s, it's definitely Harris. But apparently Wojo Owitz is up to some trouble, I guess, all of a sudden in this episode. He shows up late all of a sudden all the time.
Yeah, didn't know that that was a thing. I would think that we would have made a bigger deal about that at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was late way early on, back when I think he was banging Wentworth, or maybe it was somebody else he was banging. Definitely wasn't Wojo's girl, though we try not to talk about that episode around here. For those episodes.
That's like the Voldemort of this show. Just don't mention it.
Yeah, no, he's late. And Barney goes out and takes the call instead of him. Oh, boy. And then he comes in finally. But yeah, we've got a couple different stories. We've got that going on. We have the DNA of the title, a missing viral strain. Viruses. Who cares about viruses? They're never going to be a problem, are they?
Especially in New York City, right?
Jesus. Yeah.
Christ almighty. Why? And you've got the bureaucrat who just goes, it's fine. It's all fine. There's nothing wrong. And it's like, boy, even in the 70s, early 80s, all the bureaucrats were always, they've always been the same spineless sacks of shit that they continue to be.
And then we have the story of a woman who thinks that her husband is not her husband, and her husband, or maybe not her husband, played by our friend Jack Crucian, who we just saw on a Columbo episode as a Eastern European, not Soviet, chess player.
Right. Not Soviet. Sure.
Definitely not Soviet. No.
Yeah, I kind of found it weird that Jack Crucian is in this episode because we just saw him in Columbo, because the storyline behind that makes no sense. And it's not even really ever brought to a conclusion.
No, it's really weird the way that they do that. What it gives us is two really good jokes about, did you check the house for pots?
Yeah. Well, and also it gives us something that we haven't gotten a whole lot of. The inside of the bathroom.
I've never seen the inside of the bathroom.
Okay, is this the first time then? I thought this might have been maybe the second time, but for sure I was like, okay, she's going into the bathroom and Harris is going into the bathroom. Are you telling me that we're going to see the inside of the bathroom of the precinct for the first time? Oh, my God.
We're going to see a corner of the
yeah,
bathroom.
Fair.
We're not going to get a real sense of the geography of the space, but we are going to have Mitzi and Ron having a pretty good conversation in there. And it's basically, you know, hey, things change. And, you know, we get this whole explanation of that Rudolph Kamen, played by Jack Crucian, had tried to spice up their love life, it sounds like. And just because he was trying to do some new things, that's why she thinks he's a pod person.
Well, it's because people grow apart and together in relationships. And I guess Barney Miller is teaching us that message, but it's such a ham-fisted way to do it. It doesn't work very well because, you know, for a show that has had Kenneth Tygar pretending to be you know, I guess at one point what he's possessed, and then he's being kind of like perturbed by ghosts. And then he's also the werewolf thing as well.
Yeah.
All of those things are actually happening. So why is that not what's happening here? Like, I actually thought that it was going to be that. I mean, I'm sure, and I understand that it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to actually have that be the case, but it also doesn't make sense to have Landisberg be an alien. But again, for all intents and purposes, I think he is. The show makes that clear to us. So it's just a weird way to handle something that the show has already handled really well by actually committing to the thing that they're talking about, as opposed to just kind of playing coy with it.
Yeah. I found it funny because the Philip Kaufman remake of Invasion of the Body Snatchers, they was released almost a year to the day prior of this episode coming out. It came out December 22nd, 78. And then this one comes out. This is our first one of the month. So we're like mid-month of December. But yeah, I was very glad that it was kind of timely. I would say that it was a better reference than the May the Force Be With You that we had a few episodes ago.
Well, given that that's a reference that still lands in 2023, it's best kept far away from.
Yeah.
No, I did laugh when it was they did the pod people thing twice. Like I did get a good chuckle out of that.
Well, especially that Harris does it the first time. He thinks it's hilarious. I think it's hilarious. And then Barney does it. And then Harris shames him for asking.
Yeah, because he already made that joke.
That's right. And it sounds much better coming from him, Barn.
Yeah. Well, and you know what? That's the other thing. Harris is right. Every joke does sound better coming from Harris.
He's so good. Brian Glass is just amazing. And then, yeah, of course, Dietrich coming in with and dropping knowledge bombs all over the place. And the whole thing of him kind of talking about Wojo being late and everything and just kind of like sliding in some daggers in there. It was pretty good.
Yeah, I like where they've gone with Wojo Howitz. I mean, they kind of have this early thing of the episode of like, oh, he's late and Barney has to step in for him. But I don't know, like ultimately that doesn't really go anywhere.
No, it doesn't. But it makes for funny later on when Wojo basically takes Barney's place where he's like, okay, what you got? And starts asking Barney all these questions. And then Barney eventually is like, you take the statement.
Yeah.
Sit down and shut up, Wojo.
No, I thought this was an interesting episode. I think ultimately, though, the weird handling of the husband-wife clone storyline, it could have been its own A-plot if it had been done the way the show normally was going to do it, which is like keep dropping hints that he actually isn't the same person. Mm-hmm. That's what I was expecting, not this like kind of musing on growing old in a relationship, which is fine. It is a pretty good scene between Ron Glass and Kay Medford, but I don't know. I'm not saying it's not that kind of show, but it hasn't been that kind of show in a while.
Well, it's also very strange that the blocking, they didn't seem to know what to do with the blocking of this episode because they weren't able to handle all the storylines correctly. So it was like during, I want to say it was part of the DNA storyline, Jack Christian is just standing there in front of the cage. He's not in the cage because he's not a criminal. He's just standing outside of the cage and you have all this action going on in the foreground and poor Jack Christian is just standing there in the mid-ground or the background, and you're like, what's he doing? He's just standing there waiting for like the next interaction with him. Otherwise, the poor man's just standing there.
Right. Which, again, like, I don't know, like, that blocking is weird. The way they handle it is weird. The fact that it is Ron Harris and her Mitzi Kamen, the wife, in the bathroom, and now Barney is also kind of weird because it's another opportunity to be like, Barney can step in and defuse the situation because he can speak to relationships and people growing apart because he's dealt with that with Barbara Barry, who's, you know, on the show ostensibly still. Like, again, like there was an opportunity to lean on the things that we already know. And instead they like, I mean, I'm not saying Harris isn't the right person to have that conversation, but why Harris? Because Barney makes more sense. Thematically and narratively, Barney would have made more sense, would have been a nice moment with Hal Linden and Kay Medford. And we could have gotten to see some interesting character moments from Barney, who is often saddled with being the straight man, more or less constantly.
Yeah. Yeah. I was okay with Harris doing it, but I agree that it feels more like Barney territory. And meanwhile, like you said, Barney doesn't have a lot to do with this episode. Really, this is Ron Harris's, it's his episode, really. Ron Harris.
Is it weird we've never mentioned that he's essentially like, this? It's just might as well be Ron Glass.
Right.
He's not actor. I don't know. Like, I every time I look at it, like, he's the only one that really stands out as like, it's just, yeah, he's just Ron Harris.
You know what the other weird thing is that this is a December episode. And according to earlier this season, Dietrich is supposed to be at that Goethe Festival where they just have a blast because remember, Harris was trying to go to Wyoming on that ski trip.
Yes.
And here we are. It's, what was it? He always takes his vacation between December 2nd and 15th. And here we are, guys. They're both at the station. So I'm going to have to take to Twitter and complain now.
This was a much lesser episode than we've seen this season.
Oh, yeah.
It didn't even have a whole lot of highs the way that the rest of the season has had some really high highs. I mean, we've had some really good season, like more or less this whole season has been very good. And now it's like, this is kind of a little bit of a stumbling block. Cause yes, there is you'll notice we haven't mentioned the DNA story a whole lot. You want to know why? Cause it really doesn't go none of this story goes anywhere. None of the plot lines go anywhere. It's like, wow, why introduce these interesting things and do nothing with them?
The most interesting part of the DNA part is when A. Martinez is brought in, and he's the one that stole the DNA and was, he stole it accidentally. It was in Petri dishes. He was selling all the equipment to a pawn shop, basically, and that's what got him caught. And I really like Gabe Martinez, who would also be on the TV show Whiz Kids that I keep talking about, and Max Gale. So a little reunion coming up there. I think that was in 83, 84. So, but I can't see him being a kid in that. He must be like a police detective or something with Max Gale. So, because he's not old in this by any means, but he's definitely not a teenager in this.
No. I honestly found like the idea like that they had to further complicate the DNA story by having it be, oh, it's a guy who stole it and then threw it. It's like, it just kind of, nothing in this episode worked as well as the initial idea did on paper. Like the execution really faltered, which is surprising because Barney Miller tends to not falter this hard, especially when it's going in new territory that they haven't covered. It's not like this is yet another story about, you know, sex workers or strikes or something. This is something completely different. And it really rings hollow, unfortunately.
I want to say that The Dentist is a lot stronger of an episode. I like the whole, there's a couple different, obviously, a couple different storylines going on in this one as well with The Dentist. The, let's say, B or C plot with Arthur Mallett back and having him play fart noises with his hands like he was in Weird Al's band or something. Didn't really do much at all for me.
I can't believe how much fucking like mileage they got out of that.
Right.
Because you know what? They didn't get any mileage out of it as far as I'm concerned. Like they think they got a lot. I am here to tell you they didn't.
No. The best part of the episode is the titular dentist and having Jenny O'Hara show up as a special guest, and gosh, I kind of wish that she would come back more often because she was terrific. She comes in as Sergeant Holly Schofield, and she is there to, and I didn't understand at first, actually, when she showed up, I was like, what is this person doing? She just shows up, gives Barney her folder with her assignment and all of her commendations, and you're like, oh, wow, she means business because she doesn't crack a smile at all at first. And then it took me a minute to be like, oh, she's here to go undercover. Did they make that more clear? Was I just not paying attention?
No, they did not make it clear.
All right, good. I'm glad I'm not the only one.
Yeah, no, you're not. And I don't know, like that's similarly to the last episode. I have that same problem of just like, you know, this show normally does a better job of outlining what is going on here. Mm-hmm. And it seems a little, it seems like we're left hanging a little bit with the Jenny O'Hara character. Her character is interesting, but I feel like we've seen her character before too, like this idea of like a woman who's been wronged but secretly likes it. and like secretly wants it. I'm not saying it's like problematic or anything. I'm not saying that. I'm saying it's just weird that they've gone to this well twice, or at least twice, I think. Because there was right. one where the woman had her like feet touched and then she was like, no, but I kind of like it or something like that. Like there is some of that going on in this show. It's just, it's a little odd.
Mm-hmm. So for the listeners at home who might be listening to the show without following along and watching all of Barney Miller with us, what is wrong with you people? But for if you are one of those freaky people, I'm not going to kink shame you at all. But so Jenny O'Hara is there to help catch this dentist, Dr. Richard Gesslin, DDS, who is touching, allegedly touching patients inappropriately when they're under the gas, which we've seen in so many things. That's like, I think on Seinfeld, we've seen that. There's a whole movie called Uncompromising Positions. There's so many things. Like, that's always the thing. It's like, oh yeah, you go in under the gas and the doctor's going to touch you inappropriately. So they get a report. They, I don't think they send anybody over. They might send somebody over. But anyway, she shows up to go undercover to be a patient. And that was pretty funny. And that's what finally got me when Barney asks how her dental record is. And she's like, oh, I've got two cavities and whatever. And I'm like, oh, okay, now finally I understand what's going on. She goes over, gets put under, gets some dental work done, comes back to the office. Nothing has happened. She's very disappointed that nothing has happened. Feels like a failure. Goes into, or also like, oh, the dentist is fine. Goes into Barney's office and it's pretty much hitting on Barney because she is just totally whacked out under the gas. I've never had gas affect me this way. I don't know about you.
No. This is the way it affects you in the movies, as they would say.
Ah, okay.
In the movies.
Yeah. So then they get another complaint, and that really ticks her off because she thinks, why wasn't I good enough? And then when the dentist actually comes to the station, is arrested, she point blank asks him what's going on, and he never touches anybody on their first appointment. So,
ba-da-bum-ba-da-bum. Yeah, kind of reminded me of there's an episode of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia where Mac is like, went to a teacher from high school, is like, why didn't you molest me in high school? And it had that same vibe of like, I don't know, this didn't, I'm not saying it didn't work. It's just, that's a really weird thing to do with a female character.
It is.
Male character, I can see like playing it for laughs, but a female character, like, because again, Jenny O'Hara is really good in this episode.
She is.
So that's the thing. It's like, it's just a weird story beat. It's not, I mean, again, like you mentioned, it's been in plenty of things. So,
you know, what's really weird, Chris, is that we have seen the actor that plays the dentist before, Oliver Clark, who I love. He was fantastic on MASH. He was also the dentist in the Twilight Zone 85 segment, Tooth and Consequences.
Kenneth Arnold, yeah.
How weird is that?
Pretty weird.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he's not given a lot to do here, but it's like, it's one of those things where until they say that's what he's doing, they just kind of, they lead on that's what's going on. But it could have been one of those things where he isn't doing anything. But then it turns out, oh, he actually is.
Well, and the thing is, too, I'm just like, why? Why do you do this? Why, right. You know, do you have like, is that just your kink? Or do you have a speech where you're just like, oh, I see these helpless women and I just get so turned on or something? You know,
this show's not interested in asking those questions. Nice. Ha 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 ha. Women being sexually assaulted while under the gas. It's just,
yeah.
Or by their
husbands. Yeah.
Yeah. It's strange. And yeah, can we talk about Arthur Millay for a moment?
Sure.
Please, for the love of God, what were they thinking? I know that this was a thing at the time. I know that there were like fart hand musicians,
mm-hmm.
right? Which was a thing. Like, I get it, but that probably needed to stay on the Carson show and not in a narrative show where you keep doing it. And look, I know that people probably would say the same thing about what's the actor who does the thing from Spaceballs? That's like, I understand that certain
Michael Winslow. Yeah, Winslow. Yeah,
I get that noise things can be a little much for some people, but I don't know. Like, it's such a one note gag throughout the entire episode. Like, it never goes further than the one note. Like, it really never does, and it's so shocking that they give it so much time on screen, too.
Well, it's weird because that story and the dentist story, both of those take a backseat to the real stories that are going on in this episode, which is Barney is about to lose his apartment. They're going to turn it into condos.
Right.
And Harris has gotten the... Actually, I think Harris getting the book cover was the previous episode we forgot to mention. Is that right? I think he gets the book cover in the last one and then in this one. Or am I mixing these up?
The woman makes the joke about the smutty title and he's like, I think it's in this episode. You're right.
Okay. Oh, okay. All right.
Because isn't it Jenny O'Hara who says it?
Oh, I take it back. The whole thing with Barney's apartment is the next episode. Okay, so it's the cover for this one. So yes, it's Jenny O'Hara makes a remark about it. There's the whole thing of his author photo with the pipe. There's him calling the publishers like crazy and trying to be an asshole to them to get them to redesign the book cover.
Right.
That's right. So this is the whole thing. So we're covering, like, you know, I was making fun of the last episode for not having the continuity of the vacation in there. But here we have continuity from this episode, the next episode with blood on the badge, or what's he call it? Bob at one point.
Yeah. Well, I like that Bob. Harris is smoking a pipe on the back of the magazine that has his book.
So good. Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, and everybody has to call him on that. Like, even Trick, did you get to keep the pipe?
I will say it's kind of interesting. Yeah. Dietrich seems like a lesser presence in these two episodes, at least.
Yeah, it's really the next episode, People's Court, where he gets to shine a little bit more. But it's very interesting because it is that whole storyline with Barney. So Barney's losing his apartment. They're going to be turned into condos. Can he buy the condo? Well, what did he say? It's like $115,000 or $125,000, which even in today's money, I mean, that's kind of crazy how pricey it is. I can't even imagine 1980 how much that would have been because we are here in 1980 now. Jesus. And this is before Reaganomics. I mean, the whole housing industry is just going to explode. But anyway,
that's a lot of money.
It's a lot.
I don't know. I don't know how Barney could afford that.
I'm trying to remember how much I paid for my house. I mean, I'm still paying this sucker off. But
it's essentially four times. So it's like $400,000 because the value of a dollar from then to now is about $3.87.
Right. But at the same time, it's New York City. So
right. So add like 6x. So yeah, like
exactly. Add two more zeros to that.
I don't know in what universe Barney could afford an apartment, but maybe the one where he's the police commissioner.
Right. Yeah. Or he's taking graft. Hello, internal affairs.
Right.
I mean, Scanlon's going to have a great time when Harris starts making those, all that bank he's talking about, which I'm sure is going to blow up in his face. And I thought for sure it was going to by the end of the episode.
No, they're really drawing this out.
Yeah.
Which I'm good with. Like, I wasn't expecting there to be an underlying storyline in Barney Miller, but there is.
Yeah.
And I'm cool with that, frankly. Well, it's like, nice it didn't need it, but I'm glad that it's there.
And it's nice how Barney's storyline is playing off of Harris's storyline. So Harris is there. Apparently, he's happy with the cover of the book now, and especially he's happy because he's getting all these projections of how much it's going to sell. And they're talking about a second printing. They haven't even put out the first printing yet. They're talking about increasing his wages and all this. And it's just like, wow, okay, Harris is doing great. Meanwhile, yeah, Barney is like, I'm going to be out of a place. I don't even know if he says Liz's name one time in this episode. I was listening for it.
No, it's, again, anytime they mention things about Barney's personal life, it's like, guys, can we just forget about it? Because you missed your chance.
So strange. And then meanwhile, we have the titular People's Court. They pick up this episode. I mean, I didn't talk about how, the dentist guy had been in so many. Oliver Clark had been in so many episodes of Barney already and would continue to be. But this one, we've got so many returning character actors here. So Michael Tucci, the world's oldest teenager, showing up as Danny Rizzo. And I just kept thinking, that's like mixing Stocker Channing and John Travolta's characters together, I think, from Grease, suddenly becomes Danny Rizzo. But he is, or what the found him one. Oh, he stole a hot dog because he was so hungry because he'd been locked up in this basement of an apartment building. And he was locked up by, of all people, our good friend Stanley Brock, back again as Bruno Bender, as well as Howard Honig as Donald Gans, the blind man that we had a few episodes ago. And I didn't go through and look up. Oh, sorry. Leon Roth is Ralph Manza is the blind guy. I'm sorry about that. But I didn't look up every single person that lives in this apartment complex. But I think they've all been arrested before. I don't know if all of them have been on the show, but they have all been taken into the 12th precinct at one time or another.
Yeah. I think you're right. And it's crazy. Ralph Manza, this is like his third time already. Stanley Brock, it's like his third time. Like Michael Tucci, it is for sure his second. But yeah, it's just, I don't know. Like, this is for me the best of the three.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, it could just be, I think really what was selling it for me was that interplay of Harrison and Barney, but also, yeah, seeing all of these people back. And then I screwed up when I mentioned Howard Honig before. He is the guy that plays the census taker who does not have his liver eaten with some fava beans and a nice Chianti. But he's pretty great that he's just so mad at the world that they won't take the time to answer his census questions. So him and Dietrich, again, going back to Dietrich, he and Dietrich have some good back and forth. And then Dietrich also has some great stuff when it comes to the whole Barney thing with real estate. And he comes up and he just starts talking about how the housing market is going to be going crazy and how expensive everything is going to be. And I'm just like, wow, did you have a crystal ball, Landisburg? I mean, this is crazy. But then he says something and then he just goes, and I just made that one up. What? Why would you make up a fact? That does not sound like Dietrich at all.
I mean, it does if you assume that he's a complete fucking psychopath.
He even says another thing later on. He's like, and I'm not kidding around about that.
See, what's weird is like they haven't used him a lot in the last two episodes. And now in this one, it felt like they remembered, oh, yeah, by the way, we have Steve Landisburg on this show.
This is the episode where it feels like all of our main cast is really being used. I mean, all the way down to Levitt, everybody's being used properly in this. And I think part of that is, to your point, all of these character actors coming back, having so many people to interact with, you're going to get some, you know, good interactions with the guys from the actual precinct, but they're really interacting with each other. It's more of the five guys kind of going back and forth. Yeah, five guys. And just kind of like creating jibes and gags with each other while you have all of these other people around.
Yeah. And I mean, there were plenty of people in the last two episodes, but I don't know. This one just felt different. And God, isn't Rod Colvin has been on this show a bunch too? Like, isn't it literally everybody?
Yeah. I mean, good. It was a who's who of people that have been arrested before.
Or people
that have just been on here. I mean, these are all familiar faces.
Yeah, that's, you know what, though? Like, and that for me is the thing that does stand out about this episode is just that, like, that weird confluence of all of these character actors who have, I mean, I guess I'm trying to think who else should have been on this episode to make it, like, as replete with people as possible. Obviously, the two gay characters.
Or the woman whose husband was a cat burglar. She's got the real kind of weird voice when she talks. She's not Candy Azara, but she's got kind of that thing. Yeah. You know who I'm talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. Man. Yeah. Yes. I'm trying to think who else. I guess so. Ooh, he was on the last episode. We talked about the eyes, Don Kalfa.
Boy. Yeah. Or Tigar, get him in there.
Yeah.
I want to say that the guy, remember when they had the open house and he just kind of wandered in, he was like one of the homeless guys.
Yeah.
I want to say he might be coming back pretty soon. I thought I saw a thumbnail with him in it and I was just so excited.
Well, I'm glad that Stanley Brock came back. I mean, he's just so fun every time. Every time he shows up. I mean, yeah, but I only really ever think, you know, from UHF. obviously.
Oh, God. I think of him from that and from Amazon Women on the Moon, where he's getting carpet stapled to his head and he just is so happy about it.
I will be watching that movie later this month.
Oh, nice. And in that same segment, you've got Joe Pantoliano doing the, I like this company so much, I bought it.
I thought we refer to him by his name. He's known by the industry, Joey Pants.
Joey Pants, yeah.
Joey, yeah. That's Christ.
I've written letters to Joey multiple times trying to get him to respond to interview requests. And it's probably because he's not responding, probably because I'm calling him Mr. Pantoliano instead of Mr. Pants.
Wow. Joe Pantoliano is one of a handful of people who have responded to me on Twitter.
Really?
And I posted something about how funny I thought it was that he was in Congo. Because in Congo for like 5 minutes, right? When they're at the airport. And he was like, I forget what he said. He liked it or responded or something. But that was him, Penn Jillette, and like one or two other people. But Joey Pantoliano, wow. Yeah. And Alex Winter was one of the other ones. So, yeah, Joe Pantoliano. Joey Pants.
Joey Pants.
He would be too young to be in this show, right?
He could be a young punk. I mean, this is just a few years south of Running Scared, where he was in there as Snake was his name, and he had this like multicolored stuff. I mean, he's already losing his hair at that age, and right. It just like looks really pathetic with that, but I think that's part of the joke.
Yeah, because that's the other thing, and you kind of mentioned it at the opening of the episode. I'm wondering, you know, now as we're kind of coming towards the end of this season and we're going to be firmly in the 80s in the next season, if we're going to start seeing some like more recognizable 80s character actors in the show.
Oh, yeah.
Or if it is just, I mean, like, I'm not saying it's a bad thing, like Stanley Brock, Ralph Manzel. I'm not complaining about that. But I think that would be interesting because, you know, this show is still firmly feels like a 70s show. Like, again, like everything but Ron Harris.
Right.
Ron Carey will never not feel like he's in the 70s. So just the way he looks and the way he dresses and the way they dress him in this show. So, and that hangdog look. But I think when this show works, which it works very often, it works really well. And this episode is a very good example and a strange example of we're throwing everything at the wall and it works like gangbusters.
Yeah, this, like you said, this is the most solid of all the episodes we watch for this one.
Yeah. And look, you also get more Levitt being a completely obnoxious character. Like, exactly. And I'm here for it, Richard, if you're listening. So, Otto, if you're listening. I do appreciate that they were so confident that we were going to like Levitt. But this has been the season where I have 180'd on Levitt. And it has been pretty much every time he's on this show now, he is a welcome presence. And for sure in the first and third episode, because he was only billed in the second one.
Again, MVP for this season, Noam Pitlick. And yeah, these, a lot more Frank Dugan and Jeff Stein. They did both The Dentist and People's Court. And then it was Rich Reinhart and Jay Brasher for the DNA story. So luckily, we're coming back to Tony Sheehan character. Tony Sheehan territory next month, Chris. So that'll be great.
Yeah, that was the other thing that I kind of noticed as well, is the team behind some of these episodes. This episode were, it's not that they weren't good. It's just that I don't think they had the same level of confidence that the main kind of, I wouldn't say writer's room, but groups that we've seen show up plenty of times. Oh, they really have a really strong hold on those characters. And when people come in and they don't, they have things like Ron Harris talking to a female character in the bathroom when it should have just been Barney. And it's like, it's just because you're not as well versed in the character kind of dichotomy as someone who has written for the show plenty of episodes.
So we will be back with those next month. Until then, Chris, what are you working on?
WeirdingWayMedia.com is what I'm working on, which is a place to find shows that you can listen to that are very similar to this one, not just in content, but also in the people that host it. Either Mike or I or a whole other host of people host shows on WeirdingWayMedia.com, like the award-nominated 80s TV Ladies, which is nominated for an award right now, wow. Hosted by Susan Lambert Haddam and Sharon Johnson. So go listen to that. I mean, I'm sure if you're into Barney Miller, you're probably into 80s TV shows. And maybe you don't know a whole lot about 80s TV shows that are female-led, but they can take you on that journey, just like we've been going on this journey with Barney Miller. So that's where you can go, weirdingwaymedia.com. What about you, Mike? What keeps you up at night?
Oh, well, the spookiness of the Night Gallery is what keeps me up at night. And so that's why we do a show called Midnight Viewing. It is a Night Gallery podcast with you and me, but it's really hosted by Father Malone, one of our fellow lunatics here at weirdingwaymedia.com.
What are the weirdos at weirdingwaymedia.com?
Weirdies? Well, is that what weirdies? Is that what you call them?
Sure. All of our fans? Sure.
The weirdies. Sounds like the award we would give to people. The first annual weirdies.
Well, yeah, because it's like we wouldn't have Swifties, obviously, because that's Taylor Swift. But you know how Lady Gaga has monsters, right? So yeah, I think the weirdies would be the awards. And then I don't know what our fans would be.
Weirdos.
I guess we first have to find, weirdos. There you go.
We have to find the fans. Oh, they're there.
Fan. Yeah.
The one.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I turned off a listener today because I called Blade Runner 2049 ponderous. And he was just like, I'm not even going to listen to this. Because if you say that about the movie, just in the description, I don't want to hear what you have to say about the movie in the episode. It's like,
on people's toes all the time.
It's ponderous, man. It's fucking ponderous.
Infantile, how pedantic we are.
All right. Well, until we can give you a goddamn death dedication to a small dog named Snuggles, thank you so much for listening. Thanks to John Walker for doing our theme song. And thank everyone within the sound of my voice. I already thanked you, but I'm thanking you again.